rather quickly. I was prayer, song, you know, I was sitting there thinking, okay, we're warming up, but it's not going to be that fast. And he said, come speak. So here we go. It is a delight to be with you this morning. So thankful for the invitation. Appreciate Josh, Ashley, the good work that's going on here, and appreciate you. And we've been praying for you, and we hope that you'll pray for us, and we're looking forward to the week. We have the joy this week of talking about being happy. How many people here want to be happy? Great! This is the right place with the right material this week. That's terrific. We all want to be happy. I have no doubt about that. Everybody wants to be happy. The Bible ultimately will tell us how to be happy. And so this week we will talk about that, and Lord's will end the week with a joy that cannot be taken. And we will talk about why God's people of all people should be joyous and should be happy, and what that actually means and who should actually have it. Just to give you a little background on the material, I was sitting and grew weary of watching prosperity preachers and listening to them talk about happiness. And they would go on and on about how God is about to do something marvelous and he is going to make you happy. And ultimately, what it boiled down to is God is really a glorified Santa Claus, and anything you wish for, he will grant it. And no matter what happens in life, God will make it all right, and you don't have to worry about it. I actually heard one say you could walk around a house at one point, just walk around the house. Go out to any neighborhood, walk around the house, and just claim it. And your father who owns everything will give it to you. Now, at the same time, I was talking to people, and they were often miserable. And so it was a strange thing to hear them promise all of this joy and to watch people's lives and see it was nowhere near what they were promising. And so started down the quest then of what does the Bible say about happiness? And that's what we will talk about this week. What does the Bible say about it? What truly does it mean to be happy? We'll begin this morning learning some lessons from Solomon, modern lessons from an ancient king. In fact, what Solomon has to tell us will go a long way to help us realize where true happiness is. There are some things we need to talk about before we get to the meat of the material, though, this morning. And I meant to start a stopwatch so I would know when to quit. At the end of a sermon, oftentimes you find yourself rushing to get the material in because you're running out of time. I've been trying to stop that, but it hasn't worked yet, so we'll keep working at it until we get there. You and I, there are a couple of things we need to talk about before we get to the material. Number one is this, what's on the screen. You need to understand this. God has created us as, at the very least, dual beings. We are comprised of spirit. Genesis 1, 26, 27, the nature of God is spirit. John 4, 24, God is spirit, the Bible says. And so when God created man, he created us in his own image. And that is, we have a portion of us that is eternal in its nature. We will live on beyond this world. And yet God also then reached down into the earth and formed man out of the dust of the ground. And so we are fleshly. We have a portion of us that is, at least in that regard, like the animals. They are made of flesh or the dust of the ground as well, but they don't have the eternal part. They don't have the spirit. They don't have that part which is like God. And so while there may be some same elements used, there's some patently different about us. We are not animals. We are above the animals, and we are in that regard much more like unto God. My point in telling you that is this. If you start looking for happiness and you exclude the spiritual, you cannot ultimately find happiness. And that is what Solomon is going to teach us this morning. You can try and you will ultimately fail. You'll run into the problems that Solomon has, and we'll share those with you momentarily. What do we mean? What do we mean by being happy? Well, first, let's say this. It's not an emotion. Human beings have emotion, and probably you are happy this morning emotionally just to wake up. You live long enough and it's a joy to wake up in the morning. You're like, hey, we got another shot at this thing. Let's go do some good in it. I'm happy to be here. You see your wife, you see your husband, you see your children. happy can simply mean I'm emotionally feeling good right now. But that's not what we're talking about this week. We're not talking about the result of what you receive or possess or experience. You have a birthday. Everybody's happy on their birthday. Well, until they reach a certain number maybe, but generally speaking, everybody's happy on their birthday. I'm just happy it's my birthday. Or I achieve something. I have a graduation. I accomplished something. I'm happy about that. I went skydiving. Any skydivers in? Oh, I'm in Texas, so maybe I went on a rodeo. I rode a bull. How about that? Does that make you happy? I don't know. You do things, and you can be happy in doing them, but that's not what we're talking about. Biblically speaking, and I hope that you will hold on to this, in the Bible, what's being described is the person. Not their conditions, not their circumstances, not their health, wealth, or any external thing. Not something they receive. What's being described is something that they are. And when we get to Wednesday, Lord's will, the reason this joy can't be taken is because you possess something that's not connected to anything external. Conditions change. Circumstances of life change. Other things change. People change. And if those things are connected to your happiness, then ultimately your happiness is as fleeting as any of those things. And if you're trying to be happy by circumstances, what happens when circumstances change? If you're trying to be happy by possessions, what happens when possessions are lost? If you're trying to be happy any other thing, it will eventually give way, and Solomon will teach us that. What we're talking about is something that the man is. Blessed, the Bible will say, blessed is the man. He is blessed. He doesn't receive blessings. He is a blessed individual. Therefore, wherever he goes, he's happy when he gets there. Whatever happens in his life, he's happy when it happens. It never changes, and that's ultimately what we're talking about. The state of being is unchanged by circumstances. Let's talk about Solomon. Solomon searched for happiness. It's important that we learn this from Solomon because Solomon was like no other person in human history. No person ever living will have been more capable of finding happiness on the earth than was Solomon. This man was uniquely qualified to find it. If it were here, simply put, Solomon would have found it. Please understand this. Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes is not trying to bump into it. You wake up in the morning trying to be happy. That's not what Solomon did. I hope I get to be happy today. No, no. What we're going to read in the book of Ecclesiastes is a man who woke up in the morning and went on a journey. His sole purpose for going on that journey is to find happiness. He wants to find meaning and fulfillment under the sun. And he leaves no stone unturned. If it were there, Solomon would have found it. And ultimately what we'll find about Solomon is he came back empty-handed. Let's talk about his qualifications first. When I say he was uniquely qualified, Solomon was the most powerful man on the earth. The book of Ecclesiastes opens with these words. The words of the preacher, the son of David, he was king in Jerusalem. This is a man who is a ruler with absolute power. He doesn't have to run his decisions by anybody. He doesn't need anybody else's approval. Nobody can come into him and tell him what to do. When we say this man is powerful, he's the most powerful man in the world. There is no one like Solomon. He says, I was king in Jerusalem. The reason he's so powerful is not simply that he's a king. There were other kings in his day. But notice that Solomon is the king of God's nation. This is not just any nation. This is the nation that belongs to Jehovah. And Solomon is the king of that nation. He is the most powerful man of what is in his day the most powerful nation. One of them could put 1,000 to flight, 10 could put 10,000 to flight. That's what God said. If they were faithful to him, there was no nation like this nation. And Solomon is the head of this nation. When I say the man is powerful, it is singularly the most powerful man on the earth. Solomon was uniquely qualified. In 1 Kings chapter 3 and verse 5, that passage on the screen, have you ever heard the phrase blank check? He was given a blank check. Have you ever heard somebody say, well, you just gave him a blank check. He could just write any amount on it. Imagine, if you will, God appearing to you and saying, ask what you will, and I'll give it to you. This is the true definition of a blank check, because the one who is doing the offering has no limits to his provisions. Solomon, you ask me what I should give to you, and I will give it to you. That's God's offer to Solomon. Solomon is not simply the most powerful man. Solomon's the richest man on the earth. You know, if we were talking about individuals and we said, who is the most powerful man on the earth or the most powerful person on the earth today? I don't know the name that would be used. Maybe the president. I don't know what name ascribes to the most powerful person on the planet today. But let's say there's a name for that person. Here's a person who's the most powerful. If we were to also ask, who's the richest individual? Do you think it'd be the same person? Not likely in our world. But in Solomon's world, it's the same person. The most powerful man on the earth is also the richest man. If you were to read 1 Kings chapter 4, you will read a little bit of the provisions, not simply that Solomon had himself, but provisions that other people, other nations brought to him. This is the richest man in the world. He is described as, there will be no one like you. No one before, no one after. That's the description for Solomon. He is the richest man in the world. God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure, breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people. Solomon was not simply the richest, most powerful man on the earth. Solomon was also the wisest individual alive. There are three things. He's the most powerful, he's the richest, and he's the wisest. Now you tell me, if that individual is searching for meaning, happiness under the sun, if anybody can find it, that's our man. If anybody can go get it, the wisest, richest, most powerful man could go lay his hands on it, bring it back to us, and say, here it is, I found it. And friends and family, I submit to you, he's looking. He's not trying to accidentally stumble upon it. He is using all of his resources, all of his wisdom, all of his riches to find it. Other people came and talked about Solomon. The Queen of Sheba heard about Solomon's fame. She said, I had to come see it for myself. And so she did. She came to test him with hard questions. She came to Jerusalem with a very great retinue, or we might say the word entourage. Camels bearing spices, very much gold, precious stones. And when she came to Solomon, she told him all that was on her mind. And Solomon answered all of her questions. There was nothing hidden from the king that he could not explain to her. Wouldn't you like to have that be the description people use of you? Yeah, bring me your hard questions. Bring me your difficult things. Bring me everything on your mind and there'll be nothing hidden. I'll answer it all for you. That's the description of Solomon. When the Queen of Sheba had seen all the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food at his table, the seating of his officials, the attendance of his servants, the clothing, the cupbearers, the burnt offerings that were offered of the house of the Lord, took her breath away. There was no more breath in her. And she said, the report was true that I heard in my own land of your words and of your wisdom, but I did not believe the reports until I came. My own eyes had seen it, and behold, the half was not told me. Your wisdom and prosperity surpasses the report that I heard. This is our individual looking for happiness. Solomon uses his resources. He gave his whole heart to find it. He says in his book, several times as you go through the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon says, I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I said in my heart, I've acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. My heart was great experience of wisdom and knowledge. I applied mine heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is but a striving after the wind. The sphere of Solomon's search is, in the book, it's going to use the phrase under the sun. Solomon is searching here on planet Earth, trying to find it. 26 verses uses the phrase under the sun. What does man gain by all the toil which he toils under the sun? I have seen everything that is done under the sun. I saw all the living who move about under the sun. Here's an individual. You probably got a job that you have to go to every day. This is Solomon's job. For the duration of his search, this is what he's giving his heart to. This is what he's trying to find. This is every day. He's looking. He's asking. He is searching. He says, I saw all the living who move about under the sun. And all this I observed while applying my heart to all that is done under the sun. One of the saddest things in the world is that human beings live under the sun and they continue to repeat the same search Solomon undertook. It's the reason to read the book of Ecclesiastes. It's the reason to learn the lessons Solomon learned. Thankfully, God had them penned in his word so we could read the book and then not repeat the same thing in our lives. One of the great challenges to humanity is that every generation believes they're the ones who are going to figure it out. Every generation comes along and believes their previous generation, they didn't know. I hear them telling me things, but they didn't understand. They don't know what it's like to be me. Imagine a 14, 15-year-old telling their 40 and 50-year-old parents, you don't know what it's like, as if they were never 14 and 15. You can't get to 40 or 50 without being 14 and 15. They know exactly what it's like. But you know what? When those parents who were 40 and 50 now were 14 and 15, you know what they told their parents? You don't know what it's like. Only to realize, oh, as it turns out, my parents did know what it's like. You know what the 14 and 15-year-old now will say when they are 40 and 50? Turns out my parents did know just what it was like. You know what they'll do to their children then? They'll try to tell their children what it's like. Do I have to ask you what their children will say to them? You don't know what it's like. And on and on and on will go. You and I have it in the Bible so we can know what it's like. None of us have the capacity Solomon had to find it. And yet Solomon's search sadly left him without it. Solomon left no stone unturned. Literally. I mean, if it were there, if it were available, Solomon tried it. He is going to say, if you have the book of Ecclesiastes open, read a few passages with me. We'll note this throughout the week. We'll keep referencing this. We'll come back to it. But Solomon is going to tell us, I try pleasure. There are people today who believe happiness is in pleasure. Hedonism. You, if it feels good, do it. And they are telling that to everybody who will listen. If it feels good to you, nobody can judge you. If it feels good to you, that's what's going to make you happy. Solomon is going to tell us in chapter 2, I tried pleasure. I tried it. I gave my heart. It wasn't there. Solomon is going to try power. You want fame and fortune? You want power and prestige and the ability to make decisions and to govern people and to rule absolute power? That's what you want? Solomon said, I had that. I had it. I could tell servants to do this and to do that. I had people under me and I could command. And Solomon had power. Solomon is going to try pressing. He's actually going to say at some point in this book, so I was great. I don't know how many of you go around saying, turns out I'm great. Who knew? Solomon did though. And I submit to you, somebody said, it ain't bragging if it's true. It was true of Solomon. He really was great. You tell me what greatness is and I'll tell you Solomon was that. Is greatness being wise? Well, Solomon was great then. Is greatness having power and acclaim and people knowing you? The Queen of Sheba said, they're talking about you in my country. And I had to come see. He was great then. Is greatness possessions? Solomon had possessions. Is greatness riches and money? Solomon had riches and money. You tell me what great is? I tell you, Solomon was that. Solomon had it all. Literally, he had it all. Solomon tried foolishness. He tried wisdom. The point is this. You and I cannot out-search Solomon. None of us in this room are going to proclaim ourselves the most powerful person in America, let alone the world. None of us in this room are going to say, I have riches to spare at my disposal. There is no limit. Just ask and it's in my storehouse of treasures, gold, silver, and so forth. I'll write the Nobody say that. And while you and I might have wisdom, nobody's going to say, I got the wisdom of Solomon. And you and I are under the same sun, trying to find the same thing. We would do well to learn from Solomon. We're going to talk more about him in the AM, PM, and maybe as we go through the week. But in the short run, let me tell you Solomon's three problems. Solomon ran in his book into three insurmountable problems. And as it turned out, these were problems not even the richest, most powerful, wisest king could overcome. You've already experienced some of them in your life as well. And you and I would do well to appreciate what it is we have learned, hold on to it, and stop repeating the same cycles over and over and over again. Here are Solomon's three insurmountable problems. Number one, Solomon came to realize that all material things give less pleasure over time. Now, I know you've experienced that already, which is why you have a new one of the old one you used to have. You remember when you wanted that thing? I don't know what that thing was, but you wanted it, had to have it. Young people jumping up and down around Christmas, can't wait to have it, gotta have it, gotta have it, give it to me now. Hopefully you make it to Christmas before they get you, but you wanted to have it, wanted to have it. And you went out and got it, right? And you did. And they played with it for a while. And then what happened? You went into the room one day. And that ultra expensive toy that you saved up for was you found it on the floor. You found it under the bed. You found it broken. Or you just found them not interested anymore. But that doesn't just happen to young people, does it? That happens to older people too, doesn't it? You buy that new car. Who doesn't like the new car smell? They even spray that stuff. They buy it in a spray now. You can just spray it in an old car and make it smell like a new car, which is not bad. But who doesn't like the new car smell? You get that thing and it feels so good and it's like, oh, I can't wait. It's going to be great, great, great. And then 6 months, a year, 2 years. What happens to the car in which when people first sat, they couldn't eat? What happens in there now? It looks like a bag of Cheetos exploded in the back seat and nobody cares. Because no matter what we get, materially speaking, over time, our possession of that thing will give us less and less pleasure, and pretty soon, we'll discard it. I try to imagine Solomon, with all of that wealth, with all of that power, with all of that fame and wisdom, going and scouring the world, looking for peculiar treasures and this thing and that thing. And imagine him as you read the book, every time he grabs it, and for a while he thinks, this is it, I got it. This is what I've been looking. He takes it home, it sits for a while, and then he realizes, oh, I got a bunch of treasure. Solomon has to leave the house again and go back on the search. And this happens in the book over and over and over again. Solomon comes to realize it doesn't matter what I grab. Eventually, I'm going to lose interest in that thing. And it's going to provide me less and less joy. If you're looking for happiness in material things under the sun, you're looking for it every day. You wake up and you hope this will be the day I find it. And you go out and you get it. It doesn't matter whose name is on it. It doesn't matter what logo it is. They just made a brand new driver for those who like to golf. TaylorMade M1. Give it 6 months. They'll have a new driver, M2. They have new purses, if you like purses. They have new boats, if you like boats. They have new guns, if you like guns. I'm in Texas, I think you like guns. They have them. They have everything, and they keep making it, and we keep buying it, hoping this will be the one. Problem number one. All material things give less pleasure over time. Everything eventually loses its luster. Problem number two, every material thing wears out. It turns out they all break. One of the reasons that lasting happiness can't be found in material things is because nothing material lasts. Nothing. They make some very ultra expensive cars. You know what happens to ultra expensive cars? Eventually, they break too. They make planes and jets and homes of brick, and eventually, they break too. Everything wears out. Our Lord would say this in Matthew chapter 6, lay not up treasures for yourselves upon the earth where moth and rust doth, it decays. It breaks down. The reason for that is it's physical. The material world, the physical world is not designed to last forever. And so in Solomon's great search under the sun, it didn't matter what he found. Eventually it would break too. Eventually it would wear out. Eventually it would lose its luster. And over time, Solomon would be forced to say, let me try something else. It's the reason in the book, as you read through it, he keeps saying, and I tried, and I tried, and I searched, and I searched, and I tried. When I say he left no stone unturned, this is the reason. He kept trying to find things. He'd lay his hand on it. Here's what we're going to find in the book. There's never come a time when Solomon grabs something and says, Eureka, Eureka, I found it, I found it. Here it is. Solomon never does that. What he says in the book is, it's better. He doesn't have a conclusion that says, here it is. He just says, well, this is better than that. That this is better than that. And this is better than that. But he never says, this is it. Because he never finds it. Every material thing wears out. I don't know. Have you experienced that in your life? How's the washer doing? We just replaced ours not long ago. Was it the dryer? What was it? The dryer. She said it was the dryer. I wasn't home, and I'm not the handy guy, so I knew what was going to happen when it made that noise. It's time to get a new one. That's what time that is. It's not time for me to go get the tools. Nope. It's time to get a new one. That's what that is. It's broken. It breaks down. It wears out. It just, you've had to have experienced that in your life. That's Solomon's second problem. Nothing physical can bring lasting happiness because nothing physical lasts. And then the last problem that the rich king, the powerful king, could absolutely not overcome. That Solomon realized that every year that went by and he didn't find it was a year gone and a year closer to the grave. And you want to hear Solomon sad. Listen to him talk about death. And Solomon gets very somber. He gets very low. Because Solomon comes to realize, I can't even stop that. So you have all the riches in the world. Great. but you can't take them with you. So you're the wisest man in the world. Wonderful. You can answer all the hard questions. That's terrific. What are you going to do about death? So you have all this power. Can you command death not to take you? Have your Bibles. Look at chapter 8 and verse number 7 and 8. Solomon will also ask questions throughout the book. He will say frequently, who can know? Who can tell a man? Who can tell a man what shall be after? Who knows what will happen in this frame or that frame? Who only knows these things? It's as if Solomon can go so far and then the information is around the corner and he can't see it. Part of the reason for that is because Revelation unfolds a little bit at a time. And what that means is, even though we're near the middle of the Bible, from Genesis up to this point is all behind Solomon. What Solomon doesn't have is what you and I have, and that is all the information on this side. Solomon doesn't have access to that. And so he can go so far with what he knows, but then Solomon himself is forced to ask, who can tell? Who knows? What man is there? When it comes to the subject of death, Solomon is very clear. He doesn't have the answer for that. It hasn't yet been revealed, at least not to him, and he doesn't understand it. In verse 7 of chapter 8, he says, for he knoweth not what shall be, for who can tell him when it shall be? There is no man that hath power over the Spirit to retain the Spirit, neither hath he any power in the day of death, and there is no discharge in that war. Neither shall wickedness deliver those who are given to it. Solomon says there is no man who has the power over death. And I appreciate Solomon's search for wisdom, Solomon's search for happiness under the sun. He's grabbing all of this material stuff. He's amassed these treasures, has this great house, and at some point it hits him. I don't know at what age that happens, but at some point it hits us. At some point, when you're young, death is not on the agenda. It's just not something you think about. Now, I suppose youth is the result of the reason for that. There's no reason for young people to be thinking about death. They're young. But as you continue to age and age and age, you get further down the road, at some point you realize, I'm not young anymore. At some point you start to realize, wow, I can't do what I once did. And at some point it hits you, I need to be careful about what I'm doing. I need to be mindful because I could hurt myself. I could injure myself. I could end my life. So we don't climb trees like we did once when we were young. Young people climb trees. There's no problem. Fruit. Old people look at that person and say, now see, there was a time, but not now. I'm not climbing that tree. If I fell out of that tree, we just think about it differently. Solomon realizes. Try to sit in Solomon's shoes. There you are on your throne. Your wonderful estate in front of you. Searched all over the world to find joy and meaning and fulfillment in life. Everything you could ask for in the world and or imagine is at your fingertips. And then one day it hits you. I'm going to die. And you hear Solomon start asking, what's the point of all this? I could leave it to a fool and he could waste it all. Who has the power over death? Friends, when you and I start talking about happiness, you really want to be happy. It needs to include the spiritual. That's the basis for it. Because no matter what you do in the physical, these are going to be your problems. And there is nothing you can find here that is going to answer the question of what you are going to do about death. As you hear Solomon talk through the book, he addresses it frequently. In fact, oftentimes you're reading the same things over and over again. It's just stated slightly differently, but it's the same message. In fact, he opens the book with the conclusion of his search, and it doesn't read very cheerfully. Solomon grows to accept these matters. Here's the opening of the book. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Note the next phrase. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil which he toils under the sun? That's the question. What is that? Because Solomon's answer, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun goes down, hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and it's on its circuits, and the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eyes is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. What has been will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Well, it sounds depressing because in many respects it is. And Solomon is essentially saying, well, you can go ahead and live, but what's the point? Because did the sun rise today? What did it do yesterday? What did it do the day before that? That's his point. Sun rises and then the sun sets. So the wind starts in the north, circles down south, swirls back to the north, and you know what it does? It says, let's do it again. And so it comes back south, and then it circles back north, and then it comes back south, and then it circles back north, and then it. The rivers. He said the rain comes, fills the rivers, but they flow into the sea, and then what? Well, it evaporates, goes back, does it again, and then just keeps going. They never fall. How about your eyes? Satisfied with seeing? No. Ears, satisfied with hearing? No. One generation comes, and then what happens? That generation goes, another generation comes. Another generation goes, another generation comes, another generation goes. You see, for Solomon, this is it. And for many people, they will never say it this way, but that's how they live their life. They just sadly don't know it. They get up on Monday and they go to work. If they're in a metropolis area, large city and traffic, then they beat through the traffic, they get to work, they work hard, and then they get off, they come home, beat the traffic, get back to the house. Maybe they see their family a few minutes. Maybe they relax, watch a little television. They eat something. Oh, it's bedtime. We go to sleep. What do we do on Tuesday? Oh, I know. We get up in the morning. We beat the traffic. We go to work. We get up. We come back. We go back home. We see the family. We eat, wash, rinse, repeat. It's Wednesday. Thankfully, there's Bible study. I get to do something different. We're going to Bible study tonight. Thursday, I get up. I go to work. I come home, I eat, I go to sleep, I get up, and they're thinking, I'm going to find it someday. Really? And they buy new stuff. And they get this thing and that thing, and they don't know. Sadly, they're doing exactly what Solomon did on a much smaller scale with no hopes of success. They can't even duplicate what he did. And what he found is, it's a vanity of vanity. If you have your Bibles there in chapter 1, look at chapter 3. In chapter 3, people read chapter 3 and they think they're reading something different. No, chapter 3 is chapter 1. It's what we just read. It's just stated slightly different. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven. One generation comes and another generation goes. Well, verse 2 says, in light of that, there's a time to be born and there's a time to die. Yeah. Time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted. Time to kill, time to heal, a time to break down, a time to build up. Time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away. A time to rend, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a thing, time to speak. A time to love, and a time to hate. A time of war, and a time of peace. What profit hath he that worketh, and that wherein he laboreth? Friends, that's the same. Same thing. There's a time. There's a time. There's a time in every purpose under heaven. Solomon is going to use the phrase vanity of vanities. What he means by that is, in some rendering, it's given this way, a striving after the wind. And so what he is saying is the thing in question, the thing in context, I thought I had it, and as it turned out, it was like striving to catch the wind. You go outside, open your hand as big and wide as you can, and swing it as fast and hard as you can and close it. And Solomon says, when I opened it, there was nothing there. It was like striving to catch the wind. Vanity of vanities, said the preacher. All is vanity. Now, I do not mean to suggest to you that this is the end. I simply am suggesting to you that if the search for happiness, the search for fulfillment is under the sun, you don't include the spiritual. You don't get beyond the sun to God, to Jesus. If that's not part of the arrangement, if that's not where happiness is, this is what you're left with. You're left with Solomon's search under the sun. And it's like striving to catch the wind. In fact, we didn't this morning take a poll, but if we had, and we could have asked you before you came in and we got started this morning, what would make you happy? What would you have written? Now, I don't mean for you to give right answers. I'm not even asking out loud what that would be. You just think about it. But chances are good in your life right now, there is something that you would have thought before we got started today, it would make me happy. And I submit to you, if that something was physical, if that something was material, if that something was under the sun, it wouldn't have done it. Eventually, it would have worn out. It would have broken. It would have given you less pleasure. And it would have done nothing to answer what you're going to do about death. Because even if it could last, even if it could last up to the grave, it can't go beyond it. If your happiness is not in Jesus, if your happiness is not in God, and that's ultimately where we'll end this week. And that was the frustration with the prosperity preachers, who we'll talk about this morning and the evening. The frustration was preachers were telling people that physical things were going to make you happy. They were going to do nothing of the sort, and they were using God to suggest that if he gave it to you, then that was going to fix it all. Friends, nothing in the world could be further from the truth. You and I need to desperately learn from Solomon. He had every resource at his disposal. He used everything he could to try to find it. He searched under the sun, and he didn't. This is his conclusion early in the book. Then I considered all that my hands had done, and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and striving after the wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. What we'll see in the AM hour is that that verse ends the section where Solomon just talked about all of the things that he tried and all of the things he had. That's the verse that ends the section where he says, I tried pleasure, I had possessions, I was rich, I was great. And he says, then I looked at it all and I said it was all vanity and striving after the wind. If you're a New Testament Christian, what you have is what Solomon didn't have. You have Jesus. And Jesus is the answer to every one of Solomon's problems. We'll talk more about that as the week progresses. But Jesus, his blessings never get old. Jesus, it never wears out. In fact, the older you get as a Christian, the better you enjoy being a Christian. And Solomon said, no man has the power of death. And Jesus said, I do. I have power to lay my life down, and I have the power to take it again. Solomon didn't have the revelation of Jesus yet, but you and I do. Let's learn some lessons from Solomon so we don't repeat his search and waste our lives on futility, striving after the wind. Thank you so much for your kind attention.